Good morning, Arizona. Thank you for joining us this morning. Before I introduce our guests, I want to acknowledge that we lost a hero this week. Paul Hudson was in Australia, firefighter, just a hero, an amazing, amazing man. And he was killed during the plane crash. I guess they had a plane crash and it was ugly. Our thoughts and our prayers go out to the families. Okay, on the phone we have Sheriff Mark Napier.
Good morning, Sherry. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Busy as always, but doing great.
Yeah, you had me a little worried. I'm like, where is he?
Yeah, no, I was busy here at home. I'm calling in from my home office and busy with home. I looked up the clock and I said, oh, my goodness, it's 8 o'clock.
And in the studio, we have Kim. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
And both of you have a lot going on with this election stuff. Sheriff, can you tell me what's going on with your end of this?
Well, we're just getting kicked up. We're, like everybody else, getting our signatures and doing some fundraising and finishing up the website. But we're absolutely ready. We're all in to serve another term as sheriff here in Pima County. You know, there's just I wouldn't run so much for myself as I'm running because there are some things that we've yet to accomplish that are really important to me. Some things with compensation reform, a little bit of cultural change on the department, still pursuing some crime stuff. We've got some outreach with staffing and some other administrative issues that we just haven't quite got accomplished yet, and I'd like to have another 4 years to knock those things out.
No, I know. When people get elected, they expect, you know, like a light switch. It's supposed to change automatically, and things don't change automatically. It takes time.
Well, especially cultural change, Sherry, that's kind of what I was elected to bring about. Is we know that the Sheriff's Department was in a pretty dire strait when I took office. I mean, we're projected to be $6 million in the red. You know, we had the number two on the department indicted by the FBI. There were a lot of things going on, and the people really wanted change. And cultural change and organizational change just takes time. And we've made great progress in the last 3 years. But the other thing is budget-wise, what people don't realize is, yeah, I've been in office for 3 years, but I've only had two budgets. There are only two budgets which I own. I inherited one that was a complete and total mess. We did our best to right-size that in the first 6 months I was in office, and then I've had two budgets since I've been sheriff, and we're about to formulate our third. So you don't have a lot of time to deal with fiscal issues in a four-year term, even though that seems like a very long time. It really isn't. I'm very proud of the fact that in the two budgets that I do own, in other words, that are mine, we've given back to the county $11.2 million. So we went from a $6 million projected deficit to actually giving the taxpayers back $11.2 million in 2 years. And we did that while providing $4.9 million in compensation increases to our deputies and correction staff. So we've made great strides, but there's still more to do. And I'd like to continue my service with Pima County and see some of those things through.
Well, I think we're pretty lucky to have you, and I know you had inherited like a bag of worms and trying to fix that, and it's not easy.
Worms wouldn't be my first choice of words, but I inherited a bag, all right. Yeah, there's definitely some issues, but you know what? The majority, and I mean the vast majority of the people at the Sheriff's Department are some of the most wonderful, dedicated, amazing people I've ever had the privilege of working around. And I've been doing this since 1981, so I have a long history to compare against, and this is my fourth law enforcement agency. And for all the little warts and all the things that we go through and all the drama that we create, I would not trade the Pima County Sheriff's Department for any place in the world. I mean, they provide stellar service to the community, and we're doing so much that's right, but sometimes the loud noise overshadows that, and that's really unfortunate.
Tell me what's going on with Stone Garden.
Well, that's one of the headaches I have. We should go before the Board of Supervisors on February 4th. Worked with the county administrator and to try to find a path forward. I think we've offered the Board of Supervisors a compromise path that is doable, and it really works for everybody. So I'm hoping that we can lay politics aside and really look at this more rationally, more from a public safety standpoint, and realize that Stone Garden funding is absolutely necessary to public safety here in Pima County. And in fact, the Board of Supervisors for more than a decade realized that because they had the Stone Garden grant on the consent agenda, so it never even stood the test of the light of day, which is an acknowledgement on their part that they did believe this had public safety value. And the fact is that the threat environment and the challenges we face with respect to the border have not changed, but arguably have gotten worse. So the need from a public safety standpoint for Stone Garden is not less now, but arguably greater.
I truly believe that, and I just don't understand what their logic is. You know, these are our tax dollars being given back to us for a certain purpose, and if you're upset that there's no humanitarian effort written into this grant, well, then find a different grant to cover that.
Well, and Sherry, that's exactly what is available now. The sheriffs have been going back to Washington, D.C. In fact, I was there this week, and we've been advocating for a third rail of funding. We've been telling the federal government that it's absolutely necessary to address the humanitarian aspect of the border crisis. House Bill 3401 was passed, and in that is a provision for $30 million of humanitarian aid, and the Pima County should, and I would fully support them going after those funds. We've already been awarded some funds out of House Bill 3401, but that's the correct place to get those monies. It really is. So hopefully we'll find a path forward with this. I'm confident that it's the right thing to do. I do think that we need to look in a strategic way about maybe weaning ourselves away from federal funding and upfitting a district out at the Robles Junction area so that I could have deputies that are completely under the control of Pima County and funded by Pima County to address those issues coming up from the border in western Pima County that we currently don't have the resources to do. And I think in a long-term sense, that's really where we need to be.
That's a brilliant idea. I like that.
I like that. Brilliant idea. We'll have to put this as part of my commercials when I run for office here. Sheriff has brilliant idea.
There you go.
but we're actually going to move forward with that. And there are some fiscal concerns, and Mr. Huckleberry correctly points those out, that when you accept federal funding, it's not exactly free. There are collateral costs. And while bean counters can easily count those, and I am a bean counter, so I'm not disparaging bean counters, it's easy to count the cost of doing something in law enforcement. What's much, much, much harder to do is count the cost of not doing that. To suggest that if we're not out there, there is no collateral cost or detriment of us not being out there is simply silly. If we interdict 20 pounds of methamphetamine, that has a value in no more overdoses, and these drugs are going across the country. So we really need to be out there. We're really on the front line of this issue. The drug war and transnational crime threats are worse than they ever have been. And for us to back away from that is really an abdication of our responsibility for public safety.
Yeah, I heard what he said about now we have to consider the pension that follows all this overtime. And my first thought was somebody who makes the unjustified amount of salary that he makes to even talk about anybody else's pension is ridiculous. But that's my opinion.
Well, you know, it does provide our deputies the ability to supplement their income. I mean, that
right.
I would be lying if I said that wasn't part of it. But the deputies are not getting rich here. It's not like they're going to be buying million-dollar homes and driving Ferraris. I worked a lot of extra duty and off duty whenever I could because I was raising my family. I needed to put a roof over my head and food in my kids' stomachs. And my young son Travis, who's a Tucson police officer, is working 7 hours of off duty today to supplement his income because we make decent money, but we don't make the kind of money that we need to provide, you know, the things that we would like to have. So my own son is working extra today to provide better for himself, and I had to do that throughout my career to provide for my family.
We need to have him on the show.
I don't think he'd like that. He's a little bit more relaxed, and he's willing to let Dad go out and the bullet trap. But the real thing with Stone Garden that's been frustrating to me, because this has been 2 years, and I've likened it to trying to hit a moving target in a dark room.
Yeah.
Every time I think I understand what the board wants and Mr. Huckleberry wants, it changes. This started off 2 years ago with five conditions. They said, Sheriff, if you meet these five conditions, we'll approve the grant. I met the five conditions. They withdrew. And then and now it's the pension thing. And I just keep seeing this target moving and moving. And I keep trying to jump through the hoops and hit it. But it's been very frustrating because it has been a moving target.
Why are they doing that? Why don't they just cut to the chase? Because they're wasting everybody's time and money.
I think because I'm relentless. I keep fighting this, and because I'm a rational guy, I'm a practitioner, I'm an academic in criminal justice, and I make a firm case for why this. So they have to evolve the case to defeat this or to find reasons not to move forward that really, honestly, I think if we all sat down and were completely honest, a lot of this is politically motivated.
The reasons I've heard are pretty lame.
Well, there are some fiscal concerns. I will give that to Mr. Huckleberry, but those things have always been present. So if they're present now, they were also present 5 years ago when they approved the grant and 10 years ago when they approved the grant.
Right.
So this kind of evolving reasons to not approve the grant has been frustrating. And here's the other thing, and I'll kind of conclude my comments on Stone Garden with this. The people of this county elect a single individual, a single person, to maintain public safety in our county, and that is the sheriff. And if the sheriff, whomever that might be, comes to the board and says, this is fundamentally important to public safety, and I am the person, the entirety of the county, not just one district, entrusted to maintain public safety in this county, I think that should carry a tremendous amount of weight, because that's what the public expects me to do, and that's what they elected me to do. And to, you know, find reasons to not follow the advice of the expert in the room, which in this case is and always will be the sheriff, is kind of a problematic thing. I don't tell the Board of Supervisors how to appropriate money, because that's their role. And they really should be reticent to direct me with respect to public safety, because that's what I've been doing for more than 30 years, and that's what I do.
And they can sleep at night knowing that they're a lot safer because you're at the helm.
We are a lot safer. Crime's down significantly again this past year in Pima County because we're relentless in pursuing crime. Our investigators are doing a great job. I couldn't be any more proud of the Pima County Sheriff's Department. It's not to suggest that we don't have an element that makes a lot of noise and a lot of drama, because we do, but that is a very, very small fraction of the people of our department.
Are you hiring?
We're always hiring. We just started a class of 21 recruits for deputies. We've got a class going through for corrections. So we're in a continual hiring process, trying to keep up, and we're doing much better. We're going to be near full staffing in corrections and the deputy side by spring.
Oh, cool.
Which if you'd asked me a year ago if we'd ever be able to do that in this economy, I would have told you no. But we have really redoubled our recruiting efforts, and we're doing so much more with recruiting than we've ever done. And our entry-level pay is up to the point where we're marketplace competitive, which is great, because we were not. When I took office, a starting deputy made $20.85 an hour. We could not recruit anybody at $20.85 an hour because we were well below the marketplace. Today, that same deputy makes $25.50 an hour. So now we are marketplace competitive. We're starting to draw some laterals. We're seeing much more interest in becoming a deputy. But, you know, unemployment is still at historic record lows. The economy is booming. And so it's not just the Pima County Sheriff's Department that's struggling recruiting people or hiring people. It's everybody in industry, whether you're a tech person or a landscape person. I mean, how many times have you driven by a business that says hiring or help wanted? You know, I mean, it's a booming economy right now. And it's tough for everybody to hire.
Okay, we have to take a break because John's waving his arms and jumping up and down. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest in studio is Kim. Kim's running for the county recorder's office. On the phone, we have the sheriff, and we're talking about the things that are pertinent to Pima County and things that his vision for the future. Sheriff, are you still there?
I'm absolutely still here, Sherry.
Okay. We were talking about the fact that you're hiring, and I've got a recruit for you.
Well, send them our way. You know, in the hiring thing, one of the things we're doing I'm super proud of, because it's really an innovative approach, is we're partnering now with the JTED programs here in Pima County, and I'm specifically fond of the south side of town, so the Sunnyside School District. And what we're doing is we're doing a co-branded partnership with JTED to say to, you know, juniors, sophomores in high school, if you take these electives while you're in high school and you keep your nose clean, when you graduate high school and turn 18, the sheriff will fast track your hiring as corrections officers. So imagine this, your kid, you're 16, 17 years old, and somebody comes to you and says, hey, if you take these extra classes, you could be a corrections officer making $21.50 an hour at 18 with full benefits. Then if they give us 3 good years as a corrections officer at 18 and they turn 21, we will then fast track them into being deputies. So we're taking these kids that might otherwise not have a life path, or feel, you know, that the world's kind of passed them by, and saying, look, if you want to be part of our family, we're going to help you get there. So we're trying to create a fun stream of recruits into the future and try to help some of these kids that are otherwise socioeconomically disadvantaged to becoming part of the Pima County Sheriff's Department family. I'm really excited about that program.
Yeah, that sounds like a great program, and you're trying to get the kids before they get in trouble. I mean, kids do stupid things sometimes, and so do adults, but sometimes these things follow them around for the rest of their lives, and what they really want to do, they can't do because they've got a record.
Well, that's the problem, Sherry, is they get out of high school, and that time between 18 and 21, they may do things that will forever prohibit them from being a law enforcement officer, even if they have an epiphany at 23 and say, you know what, I need to get my life together, and they come to us because of the post-hiring guidelines, you know, that we have to adhere to, we could be in a position where we could never be able to hire that person. So if we get them when they're a junior, sophomore in high school, before they do any of these things, and then fast-track them into a career in law enforcement, we're really doing a good thing all the way around. And I'll tell you that my experience is these young people make very good law enforcement officers, much more so than a kid that goes to the University of Arizona and gets a degree in ancient Sanskrit and has $50,000 in student loans and goes, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? I think I'll become a cop for a while. Well, with no life experience, they tend to not make very good police officers. But a kid that grows up in the inner city and, you know, kind of has a
street smart.
Yeah, they're street smart, they communicate well, they've had some life experience, and then just from, you know, being a father and a grandfather, to be able to reach down and give a kid hope that might otherwise not have that, that pulls at my heartstrings. And you know, I was going to be a school teacher if I weren't a police officer, so it fits like a glove in everything that I believe. I'm really proud that we're launching that program.
Okay, do they get college credit for going through these courses?
Well, not through the JTED program, but when they go through our academy, Pima College does give credit. So they'll be well on their way to get an associate's degree by virtue of going through our academy to become a corrections officer, and then subsequently to becoming a deputy, they get quite a bit of college credit. So essentially, when they get out of the deputy academy, they've got to knock off some general ed and a couple other odd and ends, and then they can come out with an associate degree, because we have a great partnership with Pima Community College.
And that's transferable to, like, the U of A or ASU?
Yes. If they want to go on and get their undergraduate degree, they could, you know, they've got their ticket punched with their AA degree if they knock out the general ed stuff, and then they can go on and get a college degree, which I really wish that we would have a better tuition reimbursement program with the county, but that's not something that is well-funded right now. That's another thing I'd like to pursue in my second term, is trying to find a funding stream for that.
Yeah, I think that would be incentive for a lot of people, you know, to be able to, kids look at college now and they're like $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 in debt to get a degree, to get a job, then all you're doing is working to pay back that debt. And it's
frustrating. Well, and
it's
some kids just don't feel like that's something that they could ever do.
Exactly.
You know, there's a sense in some parts of our community of hopelessness. And that makes me sad. I mean, I think everybody should be able to pursue their dreams and have opportunity. And if the Sheriff's Department, by collaborating with JTED, can provide a life path and some hope for some kids that might otherwise not have that, and at the same time help our recruiting and get some really good people in the door, that seems to me to be the ultimate win-win for everybody.
Is this program you're talking about, is it the equivalent to the ROTC?
It's kind of like that, where we'll actually provide some instructors. They'll go through some elective courses while they're going through high school. And once they complete these electives, what we'll do is we'll waive some portions of the hiring process so that they will have a significant advantage over anybody else coming in the door, and so that we can literally fast-track them right into corrections. So it is similar to like a ROTC program.
Well, you're saying, you know, fast track. Do they get to skip running 3 miles?
No, we still, because we'll still have to have physically fit people, because the corrections environment, you know, they have to tussle with inmates and stuff. And we want overall health, too. You know, a lot of our kids spend a lot of time playing Nintendo and stuff, and that's not a healthy lifestyle. So, you know, we do still do physical fitness because it's part of being a healthy law enforcement officer.
Okay, so there's some things that... Okay, when you say fast track, what does that mean exactly?
Well, what we'll do is we'll look at our hiring process and see where we can eliminate things. And some of the easy things would be like oral boards, stuff that we have discretion over in the hiring process that we could eliminate that might otherwise not be difficult for that person to navigate. We might be able to eliminate the written test, and those things. There are certain things we'll always have to do, like the psychological and some other things that the county requires, but we can make it much easier and much quicker for them to go from 18 graduating high school with the JTED program that, you know, we've co-branded into being a corrections officer.
Yeah, the oral boards are really intimidating.
Well, we don't teach kids to do that. I've done hundreds of those in my law enforcement career, and I remember sitting through one, and this kid came in who just gotten out of the military, and one of the questions was, can you tell us what you've done to prepare yourself for a career as a Tucson police officer? And this kid had so much to talk about with the military, wearing uniform, following rules, being part of a multicultural environment. There were a lot of things that this kid could have knocked that question out of the park, and instead he focused on the word police officer, and he said, well, I guess I haven't done anything. Well, you have to score what he says. And it was, I wanted to yell at the top of my lungs, no, kid, no, talk about your military. But of course, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And the kid failed the oral board, and there was no reason for it. He had everything in the world to talk about, but nobody had sat down and kind of coached him on how to conduct an oral board. We just don't do that. It's like financial stuff with our kids. They get out of high school and they don't know how to balance a checkbook.
Yeah,
you know, we're really not preparing kids very well for the future they actually face.
There's so much information online. Isn't there something online that, you know, okay, here's a list of questions. Prepare yourself to answer these type of questions. At least, you know, like they do with Miss Universe and Miss America, they prepare, you know, it's this kind of the same thing. You're in front of, you know, it's an oral board.
Yeah, they just don't know what to expect. That's the problem.
Prepare for the unexpected, they'd have better answers.
Yeah, they sure would. And a lot of these questions are going to be boilerplate questions that are going to appear in every oral board, and you need to be ready to answer those. But, again, we're just not really preparing kids for that. The other thing that in this whole area of education and so forth that I'm really proud of is we are – one of the things I committed myself to when I became sheriff is to elevate – the competencies of the entirety of my command staff. So by late spring, the beginning of summer, every one of our commanders on the Pima County Sheriff's Department will have attended some executive level leadership training, because that was never valued by the prior administration at all. And we brought the Northwestern Command and Leadership School to Pima County. And when we do that, we get seats there, and then we don't have to pay per diem and travel expenses and everything, because the training is right here. And so the last batch of my lieutenants and some other civilian command equivalent staff are going to be going through that starting on Monday. It's a 10-week program. It goes over 5 months, 2 weeks on and then 2 weeks off and 2 weeks on, for a total of 10 weeks. And it's one of the most respected command schools in the nation. And every commander will have gone through that or the equivalent by summer. And that's to elevate us to so that command staff can provide better service to the community as well.
Yeah, I think this is my perspective again. Under the old regime, it was, I'm the leader, you're the follower, and not mentoring. There was not a lot of mentoring going on to help people learn what they need to learn so that they could pick up that baton and run with it when the time came.
Well, you're exactly right. And part of what every leader should be doing, and I am doing, is succession planning. I don't have any intention of being the sheriff for 20 years. I think that's not good for the community, certainly not good for Mark Napier. So what I should be doing is succession planning. So what does the organization look like when I'm not there? And how have I prepared people to pick up the mantle of leadership, not based on what it used to be based on, which was honestly cronyism.
Right.
It was, you know, it was a cronyism system in which, you know, it was very autocratic. You know, when I took office on January 1st, 2017, my staff came to me and said, Sheriff, we have a big problem. And I said, what's that? Well, we're, you know, it looks like we're going to be $6 or $7 million in the red at the end of the fiscal year. And I said, why is that? And nobody could tell me because they didn't know anything about the budget of the department because only a few people were really allowed to know anything about that. Well, that's unacceptable. And now almost the majority of my commanders know, at least in boilerplate terms, about what our budget is. It's $159 million. We should take good stewardship over those tax dollars. But we weren't doing that in the past. We are now.
Well, that's remarkable. And I know you're making some really positive changes. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Mark Napier. He's on the telephone. He decided to stay home today.
Well, I think Mrs. Napier had something to do with that. she hardly ever gets to see me, which I'm still trying to decide if she's disappointed in that or not.
it's one of those things.
We've been married a long time. I'm very fortunate to have her. I couldn't have done anything in life that I've done without being married to Marlene since 83. I mean, we've gone through, you know, we were both a couple of kids in Iowa. She was a nurse and I was a police officer in 83 when we got married. And, you know, we could have never dreamed the life adventure that we would come up against here, that we would end up in Tucson. And she's still a nurse. She's been a nurse since 1980. I've been a cop since 81. And now we have four adult, very successful children. We're about to have our third grandchild in July.
Oh, wow.
And life's been good. It really has, and we're so blessed to have the opportunities that have been presented to us. And I hope the county blesses me with the opportunity to serve as a sheriff for four more years, conclude my career, and ride off into the sunset with Marlene and my grandchildren. I'll still be a part of this county. I care deeply about what happens. This county's my home. You know, a lot of politicians, they don't internalize it the same way that I do, is that after I'm not sheriff anymore, it's not as though I stopped caring about this place. It's still my home. My kids live here. My grandchildren live here. And I care deeply about the future of this place. And that's the only reason I stepped up to serve. I had a great job at the University of Arizona that I loved, and I was making good money. I had no stress in my life at all. And the opportunity came to step up and serve some more, and that seemed like the thing to do.
Yeah, you have to kind of wonder. You have to be passionate about this. And if you remember last week, we were talking to the chief of police from Oral Valley, Danny Sharp, and what he said was so true. If you're looking for a paycheck, this is not your job, because it's something that you have to really want to serve the community, and you never know what's going to be thrown in your lap when you're in that position.
No, you most certainly don't, and you're never going to get rich doing this, and I don't know why, but I always knew when I was a little kid I would be either a police officer or a school teacher. As it turned out, I ended up being both. I've taught for Boston University for the last 15 years in their master's program, so I ended up being both things, and you know, I knew I'd never get rich, but also knew, you know, there are some benefits. You know, you're going to have a steady income. There are almost never layoffs in law enforcement, so you know you're going to have a job. And then, you know, the other thing I tell kids when they're thinking about becoming a cop, you might be able to make more money, and I'll grant you that. You might be able to make more money, but will you be able to give your life with purpose? And at some point, you're going to sit in your rocking chair and you're going to be reflecting upon your life. Did you give it with a sense of purpose? Did you serve other people? Or did you just make a lot of money?
Right.
I'll choose serving others and having a life of purpose. And when I hang all this up, I will say, you know what, Mark, for all the scars and all the battle injuries and all those things, you gave your life with purpose, and that's a blessing in itself.
Absolutely it is, and I appreciate you doing what you're doing for the county because I know you're very dedicated. I want to ask you a little bit. I don't know if you've got information about this since you're at home, but I want to talk a little bit about human trafficking and the county. I know the county has issues. I mean, all of Arizona has an issue with human trafficking. What's going on with that with the county?
Well, we face that because of our proximity to the border. I mean, the border is a liability with respect to human trafficking, and it's true that that is not the primary conduit for a lot of human trafficking that comes out of Europe and so forth. But it is something that we really need to be keenly aware of, and it really flies under the radar screen. There are several social service agencies here in the Tucson area that address this, and one of them I'd like to give a plug for is called Lady Peace, and that's formed by some young women that are particularly interested in combating child sex trafficking and so forth, and they do great work. I've been at several of their events. Really a very dedicated, wonderful, articulate young women on this issue. But it's one of those things that kind of flies under the radar screen a lot, and we don't want to think about it because it's such an ugly crime that we want to believe it doesn't really occur, but it does. And then a lot of these women end up in prostitution, which is kind of the end point of human trafficking, especially for young women. And that's a tragedy. I mean, whatever that woman's life might have been before they got involved in this will be forever changed. Even if we can take them out of that human trafficking environment, the emotional and psychological scars that they will live with for life, I don't know that can ever be repaired. So something we need to pay a lot of attention to. And in part, Stone Garden helps us be more present along the border to stop those things, because the migration of migrants into the United States is in effect human trafficking, orchestrated by the cartels south of the border. Migrants are victimized sexually, financially, and criminally as they make this trek across the border. So what we think of it is that it, you know, kind of an innocent activity of people coming here for a better life, that's not necessarily true. The victimization of these people is pretty horrific.
Yeah, and it's not just the human, the sex trafficking. There's so many different ways these people can be enslaved, and that's what it is. You're being enslaved. You have to work so many hours because I brought you over the border, and you're indebted to me now. So this is what you have to do.
Yeah, or worse, Sherry, what happens all the time is the person will pay the coyotes, you know, $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 to be shepherded across the border, and thinking that they're going to be led all the way to Phoenix or to some population center where they'll be safe. Well, they get a few miles into the United States, and they're abandoned by the coyote, and then they're out in the desert with, in it, you know, no water, no food. We end up doing a lot of rescues, and I give Border Patrol a lot of credit. They don't toot their own horn on this enough, but Borstar saves a lot of lives because we get a lot of calls at 911 in the county from migrants lost in the desert requesting to be saved because the coyotes have abandoned them.
Yeah.
Worse is when we recover bones out there, which was somebody who could not call or somebody who was otherwise victimized, and their family will never know what happened to them.
Yeah.
But we find the bones, and to the tune of dozens a year of bodies that we find, and those are only the bodies that we find. We'll never know how many bodies are in the western deserts of Pima County if people have lost their lives coming across the border.
Trying to come to a better life and being
Absolutely.
Lied to, being lied to by these coyotes. I know Mark Daniels, the Cochise County Sheriff, said that, you know, the man told him, well, those lights over there, that's Phoenix, when it was Sierra Vista. And, you know, you're
yeah,
on your
Phoenix
own.
Phoenix is right over that next mountain, and
exactly.
It's actually still 70 miles away.
Yeah.
It's just really tragic what happens to these people. And, you know, some of the people on the far right will tell me, well, that's too bad, Sheriff. They decided to come into this country illegally. Well, I'm a Christian. I'm a humanitarian. So my compassion is toward all human beings. And if you or I woke up in Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador this morning, we might be making a very similar decision that I cannot live here. This is not safe. I can't provide for my family. And you're making very, very desperate decisions. And my heart goes out to these people because they are in very desperate conditions in Central America. And it's unfortunate that so many of them are victimized.
It is. And you know, we've got, like you said, the Border Patrol. They say they're the only people who have to run after their patients. They're there to help people and give them aid and, you know, first aid. They're out there saving lives, but they don't get the credit they deserve.
Well, we're actually working with the No More Deaths people. We've got a good, at the Sheriff's Department, we've got a good relationship with those activists, and I support what they're doing. They're putting water stations out there to try to help people that are going to be there anyway. And I support that. I know that makes some on the right upset with me, but as a Christian humanitarian, I can't feel otherwise. But we're working with them to better define our protocols so that when a migrant calls 911 because they're lost and they're desperate out in the desert, what do we do? How do we follow up on that to make sure that Borstar goes out or that our search and rescue people go out to try to find and rescue this person? Because sometimes the GPS ping on the cell phone that we'll get only provides us kind of a broad area where they might be. And, of course, the migrant has no clue. They're just out in the middle of the desert somewhere. They have no idea where they're at. So we do our very best to try to save these people's lives. But, unfortunately, all too often, they end up perishing out there.
They still have those blue lights, don't they?
Yes, they do. Multiple locations, the Border Patrol has these rescue beacons because despite a lot of the bad press that the Border Patrol gets, they really do save a lot of lives. They do. And some of the activists will say to me, well, Sheriff, but that's not right because they're going to get deported. And I said, would you rather be deported alive or found dead?
Yeah.
I choose deported alive. It's not the best solution, but it's far better than
going
my
home
deputies
in a body
finding
bag.
Your bones.
Yeah. Absolutely. So tell me what your campaign. Tell me about your campaign. What's your slogan? What's your motto? What are you doing?
Well, we have a website. It's real easy. It's SheriffNapier2020.org. SheriffNapier2020.org. Just keeping Pima County safe. You know, I'm an experienced, educated, and effective leader, and I think the record bears that out. And I think any rational look at the progress the Sheriff's Department's made in the last 3 years would say that, you know, we're doing a good job, and I'd like to continue that. I'm a terrible politician. I'm a good administrator. I'm a good business leader, and I'm a very good cop. Terrible politician. So I don't really have a catch slogan or anything like that, other than, you know, we need to keep progress going. And I think we're moving in the right direction, and we need to keep doing that. We cannot turn the Sheriff's Department over to unqualified persons. And I know that people have passion, and they think, wow, if I could get in there, all these things I would do. But I've spent a lifetime preparing for this position. I have a master's degree. I've got more than 30 years of experience and progressive experience up through the command ranks to be able to manage budgets and manage large numbers of people. And you can't learn that through osmosis or passion. It's something that you have to learn through experience and education, somewhat in trial and error of learning what not to do, sometimes as important as what to do, navigating the political environment. I think that, you know, I'm well prepared for this position. I know that some other people have expressed interest in running that have never managed more than six people and never managed a budget. Well, that's nuts. You know, this is a big business. The Pima County Sheriff's Department has 1,500 employees with a $159 million budget. This is not an entry-level position. Despite how much passion you might have for doing it, this is a very, very demanding position, and it requires
experience.
A lot of experience, education, and the ability to navigate these things. I often tell business groups that I stopped being a cop long ago. Right now, I'm a business leader. I'm managing a very large business, and I have to have business acumen to do that. And over the last 30 years, and through a variety of experiences I've had, I've been able to do that, and I think that the record proves that. I don't know any other public entity that's given back $11.2 million in 2 years. That is remarkable, and at the same time, we gave almost $5 million of raises to our people. that's pretty significant. And we do that by understanding budgets and how to manage them, which is part of my job now.
I want to know what you were doing in Washington. You said you were in Washington this past week.
Yeah, this is really exciting. The president...
Brace yourself.
Yeah, the president, by executive order, directed the Attorney General of the United States to form a Law Enforcement and Administration of Justice Commission. The last time that this was done was 1965 under President Johnson. So it has been a long time since we formed this commission to look at law enforcement criminal justice issues. So I was invited to Washington, D.C. this week to attend the inaugural meeting of that commission. I believe I'll be put on one of the subcommittees. And if you do look back in history, there was a lot of things that came out of this effort in 1965 when President Johnson did it. So we're going to make a comprehensive look at the criminal justice system. Criminal justice reform is absolutely necessary. But also, how can we better support law enforcement? And that means right down to the deputy and police officer level. How can we better support what they're doing, both from an economic standpoint, a mental health standpoint? How can we better engage our community? What technologies do we need to be looking at? So this commission, at the direction of the president, will be looking at all of those things. And I was very pleased to be invited to that inaugural meeting in Washington, D.C., which really bespeaks of the new way the Pima County Sheriff's Department is being looked at, because previously we were never thought of in that context. And I've worked very hard to expand the reach of the Sheriff's Department. I'm currently the Vice President of Arizona Sheriff's Association, and I'm the Vice President of Major County Sheriffs of America. And in that capacity as Vice President of Major County Sheriffs, I was invited back to attend this inaugural meeting of the commission, which should be very important to all people. With our respect to political ideology, criminal justice reform is absolutely necessary, and we need to look at how we better support law enforcement in this country. And I'm very excited that the president directed the attorney general to form the commission.
Do you know Jack Harris?
Yes.
He should be on that commission, too.
Yeah,
he's got a lot to offer.
Well, we're forming right now. The commissioners have been set from major county sheriffs. Sheriff Bob Gualtieri from Pinellas County, Florida, who's a good friend, is actually seated as one of the commissioners. I've applied to be on a couple of the subcommittees, but there's literally hundreds of law enforcement executives that have applied. So they're forming those subcommittees right now to report back to the commission on specific elements of this system. And I hope to be impaneled on one of those, not because I don't have anything else to do, but
it's
an exciting
time.
Opportunity. And then just in that same vein, I'm really happy to say that there's a premier law enforcement executive leadership opportunity in the country, and it is the premier one. It's so elite, you cannot even apply to go to this school. You have to actually be nominated by the special agent in charge of the state, FBI.
Oh, wow.
Then you go through a national vetting process, and then you're selected to attend, and that's the FBI's National Executive Institute. I'm really happy to say that, it's a surprise to me, but I was nominated by the SAC in Phoenix to attend. I survived the national vetting process, and I'm the only law enforcement executive in Arizona that was selected to attend that school this year. So I'll be attending the FBI National Executive Institute this coming year, which is...
And how long? How many weeks is that?
It's 3 weeks spread out over the year. It's a week in March, a week in June, and then the final week is actually at the Scottish Police College in Scotland. It's an international program.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, it's really neat. The FBI pays for all of it, except for my time. And so they pay for all the travel expenses, all the expenses associated with attending the institute. And I'm just really honored. I was blown away when the SAC called me and said, "Hey, Mark, I've nominated you to attend the NEI," which is the acronym. And I said, "Wow, that's..." And he goes, "Would you like to go?" It took me about 2 seconds to say, "Absolutely, I would like to go, because whatever I learn is going to make me a better sheriff for this county." And that's important to me. It's not about a resume piece. I'm too old. My resume is irrelevant. The only resume I want to have is being the sheriff of this county. But attending that school will certainly interact with some of the largest law enforcement executives in the nation at one of the most prestigious leadership schools offered. And after you're nominated, you have to survive the national vetting process. And I was able to survive that vetting process.
Okay, tell me what the vetting process entails.
It's the FBI in general, I mean, in the larger sense, looking at all the people that were nominated across the country, and actually internationally as well, and then deciding which of those nominees would be best suited to attend the school.
Did they take your fingerprints?
I already have a secret security clearance from the national security clearance, so that was kind of a moot point. I maintain a secret security clearance because I'm on the executive committee of the Arizona Joint Terrorism Task Force,
okay. And
in that I get briefings that you have to have a secret clearance to even hear that stuff, and some of it's pretty scary.
Yeah, it is. Well, I hope you have a great weekend. I'm glad you called in. I was getting worried. I'm like, where is he? It's not like
him. Well, I usually like to sit right beside you, but today Marlene is here, and I wanted to see her. And I'm going to the Salif event, Putting on the Ritz, tonight as a fundraiser for the Southern Arizona Law Enforcement Foundation. I'll be there tonight.
And
sheriffs don't get a day off. I've noticed that. They let me work as much as I want to.
Which is 7 days a week.
It is.
And where's this event going to take place?
At Ventana Canyon.
Ventana.
It's to raise money for the Southern Arizona Law Enforcement Foundation, which Pima County is Sheriff's Department is now a member of, which we were not before. And I try to attend as many of these events. I attend about 150 public events a year, every year that I've been sheriff.
You're everywhere.
Well, that's part of the job, is to be out there hearing from people, and it's... I found out that there really are 65 hours in a 40-hour work week. I've done the math on that. I'm pretty confident.
You know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in.
I'm very happy to, Sherry. Thanks for having me, and everybody out there, have a very safe weekend. Drive carefully, drive respectfully, and get where you're going alive, and be careful.
Okay. You take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
In the studio, we have Kim.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I am really glad that we had him on the phone, because I learned a lot. I just learned a whole bunch.
So did I. Wow. He's amazing.
Yeah. And I think we're really lucky to have Sheriff Napier. I want to talk a little bit about what you're going through, because you're also running. It just fascinates me when people run for office, because it's just, they get into your business. And what are you doing to prepare for your run?
Well, let me start out with, I am the Assistant Chief Deputy at the Recorder's Office currently. So my background and my experience, I think, is extremely important in this particular position, for sure. And I need to echo Sheriff Napier when he says, you know, the experience matters.
It does.
And from budgets, you know, we have a six-point, we don't have the same budget as the Sheriff's Department, but we do have a $6.5 million budget that we need to manage, I need to help manage and create every year. And it fluctuates. Our budget, I'm sure the Sheriff's Department, their budget's a little more steady. Ours, if it's an election year, we jump $3 million, and we have to, because we have so much, and it's all personnel.
Right.
You know, for the most part, it's all personnel. So that, the legislative bills coming in right now, there's a lot that are really affecting voter suppression. We see that. So watching the bills and creating new bills to make sure that the voters, voting, the integrity of the voters and the integrity of the system is in place, along with making sure everyone who wants to vote can vote.
And only once. You can't
only
go from
once.
Polling
only
place
once.
To polling place
sounds-
voting.
No, we definitely have the accountabilities in place to make sure
now,
that doesn't happen.
Now, somebody can go to jail for doing that, right?
They can. Normally, they get fined, a heavy fine, and it is a felony. So they can absolutely be charged with a felony.
And they have to pay money back and
they
sit
do.
And,
they
sit
do.
In jail
and we have cross-state checks and all that happen. And I think currently we have, I think, two people from Nevada that did do that.
Intentionally, or was it like, I can't remember if I voted or not?
Let's go across the border and across the state line, and you're going to get caught. That's the bottom line. And, you know, I put it into the perspective that if you're... people still try to rob banks. You know, there's still going to be those people that are going to try to
do stupid things.
Do stupid things. And, that's it.
You're going to catch them.
Yeah.
Okay. We are running out of time. I just want to remind everybody, keep safety in your mind and say a prayer for Paul Hudson and his family, this hero that we lost this past week in Australia. And until next week, I want everybody to shop local, stay safe, and we're going to have you back on the show to talk about everything that you've written down here.
Wonderful. We do have an election coming up. Don't forget.
That's right. So prepare. Go register. Thanks.